Right now, it is time for The Breeze to Blow In. Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys. The Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack appraise this. You can find Treasure Quest Appraisal Group on the web, tqag.com. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Nice to have you guys with us. Now it sounds like you're both in the same place again.
We are today.
Yeah.
Today.
This is the first time in about 6 years, I think. No, it's not been 6 years, but Tim is always on the move. Always on the move.
That's right. It's a constant, and that's all good. And just checking out all those different appraisal jobs and the residential contents and fine art and stuff that people have.
All right, now you talk about contents of houses and stuff like that. I'm going to start off with an interesting story, and this kind of made me laugh a little bit. I shouldn't laugh, but it made me laugh a little bit. Here's the headline: Bel Air Mega Mansion listed for $87.8 million flops at auction. The celebrity developer is furious. This mansion was auctioned off for going to be $87.8 million, but it only went for half the asking price, $45.8 million. First of all, I don't feel too bad for the people because still you got almost $46 million. It's got 7 bedrooms, 11 bathrooms, dramatic views of Los Angeles, and it includes a retractable hydraulic disc jockey table, feng shui koi pond, glass elevators, feng shui koi pond. That's it. It also it has an infinity pool, 2-bedroom guest house, an underground wine cellar. The property owner, of course, pays the 5% auction fee. Okay. Now, while the sale is pending, the auction house is still accepting backup bids. But I love this quote. The person who was selling it told NBC News, "Horrible, horrible, horrible. Nobody told me this thing's going to go below this level." Come on, you're making $46 million.
Right. Well, and also, if you continue on the article, it says that the owner of this mega mansion also owes tens of millions of dollars to several creditors, according to court filings. So, I'm sure that he went in and any good auctioneer would have said, look, this is what this is. It'll all get worked out, but,
I
can't believe.
When you say that, that's why I'm amazed. He owes that much money. He's going to have money left over from what I see, from what he owes. He's going to have money left over.
Well, greed is greed. It just boils down to that. I mean, a lot of people have ideas that their particular property, whether it's real estate or whether it's collectibles or art, is worth far more. But, the market is the market. I mean, you can't make the interest up. The interest is either there or it isn't.
Yeah, it's just one of those amazing.
I could be happy there. I would be happy there at half the price.
I'd be happy there. Hey, listen, it's like I said, the guy made enough money to pay off his bills, and still have a ton of money, and yet they're still taking prices. Someone might be dumb enough to want to pay more than that.
Possibly, but there's an added level of that makes this a little more complicated. Is that this is part of a whole bankruptcy proceeding as well? So the trustees in the court, they also have to approve. So, if this is where the market is, or if this is a cooling, this is the whole thing with real estate auctions. It's what the market will bear. And, maybe a lot of the billionaires are just saying, hey, I don't need a feng shui koi pond.
we had a house.
Or I don't need, I don't need to have a golf green on my roof. I mean, the photographs are spectacular.
They're beautiful.
But, you know, it looks more like a hotel than it does a private home.
Yeah.
But the other thing to think about is it's a bankruptcy. It's part of a bankruptcy proceeding. So that immediately takes it to a fire sale level because, you know, people are looking for a bargain. But if it's up for bankruptcy, the bank is only interested in getting what they are owed, really. That's it. So they don't really care about how much what the owner who's going through this gets. They just want their money back. That's all. So right. I mean, of course, it's not going to go for top dollar because it's a bankruptcy sale. That's the way bankruptcy sales work.
Well, yeah, and the article also is true in stating that there's a 50% price cut is not unusual for high-end properties that sit on the market for a prolonged period of time before finally going to auction. And if this does go through at $48 million, then it will be one of the most expensive homes ever to sell at auction. So, you know, it's what it is. Like, wait, here's where the market is.
So he should look on the bright side. If he does sell it, he's gonna have a world record.
Yeah. Well, I think that it probably was. Hey, I've got to get out of all of this debt. This is great, and I think people hear what they want to hear sometimes when they're signing off. And he may not have understood the whole thing because this is part of a bankruptcy proceeding where it's like, no, here we, you know, it's not just you having to accept whatever. The bottom line is, it's also there are trustees that are overseeing this, and the court will approve it.
Right. I have a question for you, Marshall. Where do you have your bowling alley in your house?
What? Now you're going to laugh at this, but years ago, when I was a kid, we lived on Elm Valley Farm, our house. My dad, in show business, did a lot of favor for. People of, let's just say, notorious connections because they owned all the nightclubs. And one person my father did a string of shows for ran into the same problem, and he couldn't pay my dad. And so one day, this is no lie, we're sitting at the house, and these trucks come rolling down our private road and into, and out of the trucks come the following. A shooting game, a shuffleboard, a regulation pool table, a bumper pool table, and a bowling alley. Now, my mother, of course, was beside herself. She thought my father bought all those things, and she was ballistic. We had to set the bowling alley up. There was an empty chicken coop. that was really long and not too wide. We set the bowling alley up there. We turned another room in the house where we put the pool tables and stuff in. So we did have our own bowling alley.
So you know what this poor fellow's going through then.
It was hilarious. People would come to our house, kids would come to our house, and we had a damn bowling alley. And a shoot-up game, a Roy Rogers shoot-up game, and pool tables. So that's the funny thing about you asking me about the question. We did have a bowling alley in my house.
That's great.
Well, you know, we talked about last week the sale of the diamond. I'm sure you saw in the news.
Yeah. It went.
Yeah, it did. But
and so did.
So did what?
So did the raptor skeleton.
Oh, yes.
$12 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about.
The diamond sold for, what was it? 20? I forget what it was with the buyer's premium, but I think the hammer was it fell right between the range, the estimate. It didn't go over the estimate, but nevertheless, There was another diamond that happened to be in the sale that was not publicized too much. It was it's one of the largest yellow diamonds that has been sold. And when I was researching it, in fact, I think you probably got my text that, you know, I was going to be the underbidder.
Yeah.
yeah. But there was no estimate listed. It was upon request. And anytime you see upon request for estimate on something, you know it's going to have a lot of zeros on the end of it. And it actually didn't come in that much lower than the white diamond, but it also sold for I want to say that one sold for something like 17 million.
So 14.
And 14 million. And I think there was some confusion because, you know, this was in the news for so long that when it sold, they put it right up. Some places put it up with just the hammer price. And you had to really read through the article to find out what, with the buyer's premium, what it actually, the value of it was, which would be also with the buyer's premium. So I think with the buyer's premium, the white diamond, I want to say it was 1907 or something like that. But nevertheless, it fell right within the range, which is a good thing. It means that it was estimated. Had a good estimate on it. So,
right. Well, that yellow diamond that did sell at 14 million, and 14, it's a record. Yeah. It's a record price for that kind of stone, yellow diamond, and that was estimated at around 7 to 10 million. So that also exceeded the estimates. But that was that yellow diamond was the third time that Christie's, in its several hundred year history, sold that piece because it's one that has come up and
they were back, the first ones to sell it at auction. I think it was in 1938 or something like that, and it came up first then, and then
it was 1918.
1918, and then it went into hiding for a number of years, and then it was sold a second time, and then now this was the third time. So that's a great provenance. I mean, come on, that's what a buyer is looking for when they pay that much money for something, is to have documentation on the provenance. so but damn, I would have gone one more. I would have gone one more.
Well, you sound like most of our clients.
That's right. Well, the Rockefeller Estate has been pushed down the list of having the priciest private art auction. The Macklow collection, $922 million. Now, that's not from one person. That's from several people. That's the total sale of everything, right?
The Macklow?
Yeah.
Well, that's from their collection. So that's part of this. They were major art dealers in New York, and it was part of a divorce settlement. So they were dealers. They were also art collectors together, but they amassed an amazing collection. It was an interesting story when it was going through, is that each side had several appraisals done. And of course, they were varying in the numbers because one side said that it would sell for the fair market value would be lower, and one was higher, and with justifications. And the judge just looked at them and said, "There is no way we're going to come up with an accurate figure. You have to sell it." The only way to split this is they were ordered to sell unless they could come up with a compromise. And of course, no compromise was going to be had. So they did have to sell the collection. And yeah, this was a major collection that was that they had amassed. So almost $1 billion in artwork.
I know. I mean, you know, when you see these numbers today, we're almost ho-hum, only $922 million. But just think, 10 or 15 years ago, that number would have been unheard of. And I just don't see it. I don't see it stopping. I just think it's going to continue to be. It's going to continue to grow. I mean, I'm waiting for the next. You know, like within the next 5 years, a collection selling for like $5 billion. I mean, it's. I think it's possible. I really think it's possible. Sure. If things keep going. The way they're going. So, but it's amazing how what's the word I'm looking for here? Not numb, but how ho-hum that we think of. Oh, $922 million with fees. It's like, wow. Oh, okay.
We're desensitized. Desensitized to it. Is that it's just like, oh. But when you really stop to think about it, I mean, there's a great article in the Times about it, and the bitter divorce and what was going on, and it also goes to, well, were the appraisers wrong? It's not about right and wrong. It's about looking at, okay, we're looking at a market, and typically these pieces should do this, but as the court case dragged on and everybody's talking about it, it now is fueling the hype around all the artwork. So when it does auction, it's pretty typical. Of course, it's going to exceed. And you know, I think that it's an interesting case study in that in valuation is looking at that and saying, because of what part did all of the publicity prior to just the announcement that it was going to be sold at auction, did that really add to the value?
Well, the question that I have about that is, if they had to do an appraisal prior to this to get an idea of what it was worth, there's no way they would have come up with $900 million in the appraisal. So I'd be curious to find out what the actual appraisal, pre-sale appraisal was, because if that, I'm sure they're going to have to do some adjusting for taxes, because I mean the additional amount of money that this thing brought, I can't imagine that they would have appraised it at, you know, that much money, or even,
well, no,
you know, $900 million, let's say. I can't imagine. So there's going to be this is going to continue for quite a while, I think. There's the fallout from this, and fallout in a good way, because it's good for the market, but it's bad for the people who have to pay the taxes on it.
One final story. Who would ever take the Beat Generation and Steinbeck and think that there was going to be an auction? Well, there's one coming up in 2 days at PBA Galleries. Steinbeck and Beat Generation auction is going on. You don't normally hear of auctions like this, where you have pieces of literature in their whole. We haven't talked that much about things like this.
Oh, you mean for books?
Yeah, well, like the Steinbeck's copy of East of Eden, which has a 3-page autographed letter signed by Steinbeck, is $15,000 to $25,000. Now, to me, that sounds like, wow, you know, it's approachable, it's reachable, and you have something that really is very, very special. Because literature is literature, and great literature is great literature, and authors, great authors are great authors, and they're never going anywhere, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think the estimate is $15,000 to $25,000, and it says that their starting bid is going to be $7,500. So I'm assuming that $7,500 was probably going to be the. It's probably going to be the reserve. So, interesting, because I was just doing an appraisal the other day. I went to go through an estate, and the attorney was concerned because the books, he had 900 books, and he had a lot of first editions, but not by authors who were like John Steinbeck. Supposedly there was a first edition Moby Dick, which we never found. And so the literature, first edition literatures, especially by the authors that everybody has heard about, and Steinbeck being one of, I would say, probably in the top five authors for collecting first editions, that market has, it seems like it's always been very stable. And I, you know, $15,000 to $25,000 for a first edition with the provenance this has, I don't think it is going to be you know, unreasonable. I think it could probably sell for substantially more.
Well, how about this one? They've got one, the complete poems and prose of Walt Whitman, 1855 to 1888. They're valuing that anywhere from $5,000 to $8,000. To me, these sound like unbelievable captures if you can get them, and it's not at those exorbitant fees. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is terrific, long lasting literature that'll be around long after somebody's dead and buried.
Well, that's true. Unlike the house, which could be scraped at any moment.
Yeah, that's right. No, really.
So I mean, you're absolutely correct. But you see, that's what these things, if you put them in perspective, their value is more than financial or monetary. Their value is because they have endured all this time, and they're going to endure long past our lives. So you're correct. I think that these are they're attainable to the everyday Joe like us. The only drawback, I think, is just making sure that that when you buy these pieces of literature, that they are just not squirreled away somewhere. Because you've heard me talk about this all the time. Whoever buys it, that they actually open it and read it, and touch it, and it becomes a. No, I really, how I feel about that.
I was just gonna say, with gloves on.
Yeah, but these things, they're not going to go, they're not going to go down, I can tell you that. Unlike, they're not quite as volatile. Literature is not nearly as volatile as some of the other, like art or real estate or cars. The automobiles, they can go up, they can go down. But literature seems to be, good literature, it's something that every person could get a chance to bid on. So this will be a good auction. I'm looking through the catalog, and there are some really fun things in here. I think the auction, when did you say? Yeah, the auction is
2 days,
coming up.
19th, the 19th, yeah.
I have just one quick thing. We were talking about the Judy Garland dress.
Yep.
Well, there's a legal issue. Apparently, a woman in Wisconsin, 81 years old, says it is hers because her uncle, who was the priest who accepted the donation in the photographs, that somehow it was given to him personally, but he was a Dominican priest, and his vow of poverty in the university is saying, no, we have records. So more to come on this. This will be interesting because the sale is coming up, I think, next week. I think the 25th or the 20-something of May. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So we're we'll have to hold our seats on that Judy Garland dress.
You know, I'm just sorry. Yeah. I'm just sorry that I haven't digitally taped this Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial, because when it's over, I would have taken my digital thing and made an NFT out of it and probably made
NFT.
Oh my God, we've done it again. We've entered into that realm. I had to bring it in.
I had to bring it in. All right, guys. I'll speak to you guys.
Have a great week.
Have a good week, guys. Goodbye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on Robinhood Radio. You can find them at robinhoodradio.com. Click on Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Schramm.